today, United States, Joya.
I'm glad you're pronouncing that.
I didn't try the other one, Smith. United States versus Smith will be decided on the briefs.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Ripple on behalf of the appellant, Mashudi Ashijola. Your Honors, this is an appeal from a judgment and conviction entered by the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois. Your Honors, Mashudi Ashijola was convicted of two related drug charges because the District Court permitted the government to introduce and to emphasize evidence of Ashijola's flight in a manner that amounts to reversible plain error under this court's decision in United States versus Jackson. In brief, the government does not even address Jackson, despite the fact that Ashijola cited to that case in his issues presented. The reason the government does not address Jackson is clear. The government cannot distinguish a case that for over three decades in this circuit has represented a use of flight evidence so improper and so egregious as to warrant reversal even absent an objection by a criminal defendant. Circumstances here, Your Honors, are even worse than Jackson. Your Honors, the government emphasized Ashijola's flight at trial to make up for 3 months of empty space on a record that desperately needed a climactic showdown with the only individuals, whom officers had not even gone to arrest. The bulk of the government's case at trial relied on 51 trial transcripts covering a six-week period ending, Your Honors, in June of 2006. The government presented no evidence of criminal activity in July, no evidence of criminal activity in August, and no evidence of criminal activity in September. On a case in which there is a substantial gap leading up to a criminal defendant's flight, the district court is required, Your Honors, to be certain that there is evidence that Ashijola believed that he was being pursued for the crimes charged and not some other crime or event. On the facts of this case, Your Honor, neither Rasta's purported warning call to Ashijola in the early morning hours on September 21st, 2006, nor the telephone call overheard by Letitia Kyles 4 hours later at Ashijola's apartment could have provided the district court with that requisite certainty. Without that certainty, Your Honors, the admission of the flight evidence was plain error. Your Honors, the warning call could not have provided the district court with the requisite certainty for four reasons. As an initial matter, the government's only evidence of that call is testimony of Chief Nwoma, the government's primary witness, which should never have been considered properly in this inquiry as an initial matter, Your Honors, because it was inadmissible hearsay. Chief had testified that he couldn't understand when Rasta spoke to Ashijola. He shouldn't have been able to testify to the content of that call, to the fact of that call, let alone to the content of it. Your Honors, even if this court were to allow the district court to consider that call, which was inadmissible hearsay, there was a substantial doubt on the record in this case as to whether or not the call even occurred. Despite the fact that the government admitted every relevant telephone record in this case, Your Honors, the government provided no evidence of the most single important call in this case. Third, Your Honors, even if this court were to permit the district court to consider the inadmissible hearsay testimony of Chief, even if this court were to take a liberal interpretation of the entire content of that call, the fact remains, Your Honor, that the record of this case indicates that Ashijola's conduct on that morning completely belies any suggestion that he feared apprehension by police officers that morning. Ashijola, after receiving a call purportedly from Rasta, waited in his house for 4 hours, where he expected and did receive a package. He invited a friend in to wait while he got ready to go on a lunch date, and when 15 officers arrived at his apartment without a warrant for his arrest, he allowed them to search his apartment, to search his cell phone, and later accompanied those officers to the police station where he agreed to participate in questioning. In any event, Your Honors, there is absolutely no suggestion on the record of this case to suggest that Rasta had any reason, the person who purportedly called Ashijola that morning, that Rasta had any reason to believe that when the officers arrived at he and Chief's respective residences that morning, that they were pursuing either he or Chief for conduct in which Ashijola was allegedly implicated 3 months earlier. Rasta, Your Honors, had four heroin suppliers on the record of this case. Three of those heroin suppliers are not charged in this conspiracy, and as Chief testified, they provided Chief and Rasta 60% of the heroin that they distributed during this time period. In any event, Your Honors, The only way that Chief and Rasta knew that there were officers in their residences that morning was because they were coming back from a drug deal in Minnesota for which there was no evidence that Ajijola was implicated, that it was connected with this conspiracy, or that he even knew about it. In any event, Your Honors, there is no basis on the record to suggest that Ajijola had a single conversation with either Chief or Rasta for 3 months prior to his flight about drugs, let alone that he was involved in a drug transaction. Your Honors, the government has presented Ajijola's flight as the end of an already told story for the entire second half of the story about this seven-month government investigation, Your Honor. The government can't find its three main characters, and the authors of that story have provided no explanation for that absence. All of this, Your Honors, all of this in a case in which the defense counsel openly represented that the reason why the defendant fled was because he feared for his immigration status. Your Honors, in the facts of this case, it cannot reasonably be disputed that if Ajijola were to object to the admission of the flight evidence on the basis on which he objects today, the district court necessarily would have abused its discretion if it admitted the flight evidence in this case. Your Honors, not only was the admission of the flight evidence plain error, that the admission of that flight evidence was prejudicial. This court in Jackson found reversible plain error where the government had emphasized and misstated evidence with respect to a defendant's flight in a case in which that flight may have been the decisive factor for the jury in a case otherwise based on circumstantial evidence. In this case, the circumstances here, as I've mentioned, are even worse than Jackson. Your Honor,
Ajijola did not testify, is that correct?
That is correct.
I mean, had he elected to testify, he could have said to the jury, my flight was because of my immigration status.
Yes, Your Honor, but that testimony would be facts presented to a jury, and the question here is a threshold issue as to the admissibility of the facts.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. I understand. I just want to put in perspective what the big picture is here.
Sure. Certainly, Your Honor, I understand that in the perspective, Ajijola did not testify at trial, but the big picture here, we would respectfully disagree, is as to whether or not a criminal defendant should be forced to testify to rebut evidence that this court has deemed is so prejudicial that careful deliberation is required and it is always regarded with caution, regardless of whether there's a substantial time gap. In a case in this case, there was a substantial time gap, and there was absolutely no inquiry made as to whether or not Ajijola, at the time that he fled from officers on September 21st, 2006, fled because he believed that he was being pursued for conduct for which there is no evidence on the record for 3 months prior. Whereas the government in this case not only asserted that not only emphasized Ajijola's. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I see that I've entered my time for.
You're in your rebuttal, so you can have your rebuttal time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Brendan Marr. I represent the United States of America in this case. Let's get directly to Jackson right off the bat, because counsel appears to be placing essentially all of his eggs in the Jackson basket for purposes of the flight evidence. And Jackson is certainly factually similar in the respect of where the defendant was found and his clothing condition as he walked out the back door of the house. Jackson, however, is not legally on point in this particular case, because the Jackson court explicitly said if there is no evidence, direct or circumstantial, on the defendant's knowledge that the defendant was being sought of the crime charged, then the evidence should be excluded. Jackson's not on point here. Notwithstanding counsel's commentary with respect to the record, in this case, there is, in fact, two pieces of evidence from which a jury could infer that Ajijola knew on the morning of the roundup that the people that were standing on his front doorstep were there to get him because of the heroin conspiracy. The two pieces of evidence in that regard are the testimony of the cooperating co-defendant, Chief Numa, who did in fact testify in open court, subject to cross-examination, that his drug partner, Rasta, Mr. Enderibe, who's never been apprehended and as far as we know is still out there somewhere, made a call that morning on a trip in which those two gentlemen were on their way back from Minnesota. And the testimony is quite clear that a call was made and that the purpose of that call was to let the defendant know that there were law enforcement personnel in the chief's home and in Rasta's home that morning. And the testimony was also quite clear that Chief understood one of the purposes of that call to be warning the gentleman who law enforcement at that point only knew as Mancho or Manchu of the fact that law enforcement was out looking for people that morning. The second bit of evidence that ties that together is the fact that Letitia Kyles, one of defendant's own witnesses called to the stand, testified that in the morning of the roundup, as she was at Mr. Ajizola's house for a lunch date, Mr. Ajizola was seen by her traveling from his bedroom into his bathroom while talking on his cell phone in an African dialect. Now, there's an ambiguity here, and there's no question in terms of the timing of the warning call is absolutely not clear from the record. Mr. Numa testifies that they received information that there were law enforcement officers at their house in the time frame of 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock to maybe 8:30 in the morning as they were driving back from Minnesota. The record is not clear, however, as to when Rasta turned around and made a phone call to Ajizola. And we can't point to a call in the record of the telephone records of that day that links up that time, that gives you 10:48 a.m. or 11:52 p.m. That evidence is not there. There is, however, two witnesses testifying, and it was absolutely fair to argue that the call that was made that was testified by the cooperating co-defendant was the phone call that Mr. Ajizola received when he was traveling from his bedroom into his bath while law enforcement was on his doorstep. Is it absolutely certain that that's what happened? No. But that's why defendant has an opportunity in closing argument to argue the facts of the case. I would also point out that this is a case, obviously, here on review for plain error standard. In this case, it is worthwhile to note that the defendant in this case had not one, not two, but three separate opportunities, if he believed that this evidence of flight and the warning call were so prejudicial that it would require him to be convicted or it would allow a jury to convict him, even though there was no other good evidence in the case. The government attempted to put, and did in fact put, the defendant on notice nearly 9 months before the scheduled trial date of this is what we're going to do. We're going to put on flight evidence. We're going to put on some other types of evidence. The district court in this case gave the defendant a timeline and said, here's the due date for your responses to the motion in limine. They're going to put in this evidence. Do you have anything to say about that? Nothing. The case is impaneled. The jury is impaneled. The trial begins. The witnesses testify. Chief Numa and the two law enforcement officers who are standing at the back door of Mr. Ajizola's home on the morning of the roundup, September 21st, 2006, take the stand and testify as to the condition Mr. Ajizola was in as he exited his apartment out the back door, barefoot, open shirt, asked where he's going. He says, I'm taking out the garbage. Officers look at him. There's nothing in his hands. All of that testimony comes in before the jury in trial, not a single objection at any point in time. The parties...
No reference about the immigration.
Absolutely none, Your Honor, and thank you. I was going to get to that point. Counsel argues this morning that the government was on notice, essentially because his lawyer got up there and said in opening argument, the reason he left was immigration. Well, opening argument is telling the jury, of course, what you think the evidence is going to show. What did the defense attorney attempt to do in the case?
An opening discussion, not an opening argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Absolutely correct. And in this case, the defense attorney told the jury what he expected the evidence to show was that the defendant was leaving the apartment that morning because he was fearful of the immigration authorities and not fearful of apprehension. What did the defendant put on in his case when he had the opportunity to provide evidence of that? And Your Honor asked a question about Ajizola taking the stand. He didn't need to take the stand. He did, in fact, ask an agent on the stand a question. He asked Agent Bagley, a witness that he called, by the way, not that the government called, didn't the defendant tell you that the reason he was fleeing out the back door that morning was because immigration officials were after him or because he perceived that. And the agent testified on the stand, no, I don't think that's what he told me. I don't recall that taking place. That's the only effort that's even made to establish what he can, what is now argued as a plausible alternative explanation to flight. The case goes to the jury. The flight issue gets argued by both sides. The warning call explicitly gets addressed in rebuttal argument by the defense counsel and argues that there was no warning call, that the evidence isn't sufficient. So
The argument is it never occurred.
Argument is that it never occurred. I believe defense counsel specifically said in his rebuttal argument, there's no evidence of a warning call. That's actually a mischaracterization of the evidence. There is evidence of a warning call. It may not have been linked up with an actual telephone record that establishes the time that it took place, but that evidence is absolutely in front of the jury for their consideration. The defense counsel also has an opportunity and argues about the warning issue and the circumstances of the arrest, doesn't raise, by the way, in his closing argument, the immigration issue again, and then the case goes to the jury. The defendant then files post-trial motions, arguing a number of different things, doesn't apparently at that point in time think that this flight issue was so prejudicial that it merited having the district court take a second look at it, and yet now post-trial, post-sentencing, he's here arguing before this court that not only should the district court have looked at the motion in limine to which was no objection lodged, but and should have granted or should have denied an unobjected to motion, but should have essentially made defendant's arguments for him as evidence came into the record through the witnesses that testified about the defendant's behavior on the morning of his apprehension, and then on top of that should have stopped the prosecutor from arguing about the import of the fact that the defendant exited his apartment out the back door barefoot, shirt half open with no garbage in his hands, even though that's exactly what the testimony showed at trial. We would submit the government could not have done any more to give the defendant the opportunity in this case to argue about the flight evidence issue than file the motion in limine, have a response date available to the defendant, and provide that there. And the standard, again, just for emphasis here, plain error review. And the reason that it's plain error review, the reason that that bar is set so high, as this court recognized fairly recently in LaShore, is the trial court should have, the bar, I should say, that the trial court should have excluded the defendant's, should have excluded the evidence without a defendant request, and that no reasonable person could have ever argued for its admissibility. Well, in this case, the argument was made, and both parties were represented by counsel. And there
and
was
obviously the government was reasonable.
Of course, Your Honor. With respect to the flight evidence, there's just absolutely no argument that this case rises to the level of plain error warranting reversal of defendant's conviction. Unless there are any further questions, we would rest on our brief with respect to the other issues presented in the case.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does this report? 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, but you said what you have left.
Your Honor, as the government has addressed Jackson and cites to a statement in that case that it applies when there is no evidence, direct or circumstantial, that a defendant knows he's being pursued for the crime charged. There is no evidence in this case, that direct or circumstantial, that Adjudicator believed he was being pursued for the crimes charged. The government has focused much of its argument on plain error. Jackson was about plain error. And furthermore, Your Honor, this is not a case simply about plain error. It's a case about flight evidence, a case for evidence for which the district court has a special obligation to consider the risk of prejudice to the criminal defendant. Furthermore, Your Honors, the government suggests that Chief Woma testified that he believed that the intent of the call was to warn Rasta. Your Honor, we have no doubt Chief, who received a one-third reduction off his sentence, believed that that call was a warning call to our client. What matters in this inquiry as a legal matter, an admissibility matter in the first instance, is not whether the jury could have believed Chief's testimony about that, but whether as a legal matter there was evidence that our client believed 3 months after any relevant criminal activity of which he was allegedly implicated, believed that he was being pursued for the crimes charged. Furthermore, Your Honors, the government effectively concedes that the record is ambiguous and the district court could not have been certain as a legal matter that the warning call evidenced Agitillo's knowledge that he was being pursued for the crimes charged. The government states that the record is not clear as to when this call allegedly even took place. Finally, Your Honors, with respect to Agitillo's immigration status, Agitillo need not present evidence as to his immigration status to provide the court with any other explanation for his flight. This court noted in Jackson that why the defendant flees 3 months after the alleged criminal activity is a matter of sheer conjecture. If Agitillo's counsel in open court openly represented to a district court that should be on notice that when flight evidence is presented that he has a special obligation, there should have been a further inquiry, and that court's careful deliberation or lack thereof is properly before this court on appeal. Your Honors, if Agitillo had fled from his apartment on the day in which 15 officers arrived, came down and asked the magistrate to see a sealed criminal complaint, he from that would have had no knowledge that he was being pursued for the crimes charged in this case. And from that, the government asks this court to look not to what the district court should have considered as a matter of legal admissibility, but whether or not after a 4-day trial and all of the facts after that flight, the government presented to the jury whether or not that flight was properly admitted. Sorry, Your Honors, I see that my time is up. I respectfully request that this court be vacated, sent back for a new trial, because Mr. Agitillo's substantial right to a fair trial was violated.
Mr. Ripley, you took this case by appointment, did you not?
Mr. McAleen, Your Honor.
Well, you did through him, then. And the court wished to thank both of you for your representation of your client in this matter. Thank you very much for taking the case. The case will be taken under advisement.